and this is, but then he said, again, a smart thing was like, oh, that makes sense. He said, what you have to do is you have to go through an elected representative, basically a congressman or senator's office, and they can fill out the paperwork. They can request the records. They can go through that process because there's an intermediary sort of security access area where then you might be able to get to those records through someone who actually does have the permission to look for them and ask for them once you've signed the proper release forms and so forth. So I had to go in and, you know, fill out a standard Form 180, which is to get records, had to sign a Privacy Act release and all this paperwork so they could do that process for me. And basically, I knew where the records were. My Brigadier General told me where the records were. They're in this NSA archive somewhere.
And
so, yeah, right?
And so basically what you're saying is anybody who wants to check you out is going to take up to possibly plus 5 years on.
Maybe.
If they really wanted to look at your records, per se.
Maybe. Well, and okay, so this is the funny thing about, I say, hey, I know the records are with the NSA archive. And then the aide who I was working with, this really fabulous guy, the congressman's military aide who deals with all the veteran cases, really nice guy. And I'm telling you, you know, I'm coming in this with this crazy story. At no point did anybody look at me like, you know, maybe he should take his medication. I mean, never. Never. I mean, I went into my congressman's office. I wrote this down. I signed my statement. I said, this is my sworn statement. I just want my records, man. I just want my bennies and my records. That's all I want. I'm not trying to be anything other than a guy who wants what the contract he signs that he's supposed to get. I fulfilled my end of that contract. How about we make sure that they fulfill their end of that contract? This is a legal contract in which both parties are obligated to fulfill their obligation. I fulfilled my obligation to that contract. They need to fulfill their obligation to that contract. So in that process, at no point did I get the brush off, did I get, you know, this or that. They were the nicest, most straightforward, and I really was getting the impression were really curious and wanted to know more and were kind of jazzed to see if they could get access to this information. But I also got the impression that they knew this process enough to know, like, yeah, this is not going to be fast. This is not going to be easy. This is not going to be fun. But what was funny is I said, okay, they're at the NSA archives. I know it. So let's go look for it there. And he was like, well, we can't do that. What do you mean? He said, well, there's a process. He said, if we don't go to the National Archives 1, and then if we don't go to the National Archives 2, and then if we don't go to the Manpower Management Support Branch, and all these other potential record-keeping agencies that could have it, he said, and he's the one who told me this. He said, look, if we don't go ask all these other people first, if we go ask the NSA and say, hey, we want to see these records, they're going to say, well, did you ask the National Archives 1? Did you ask? So basically, if you skip the order, they're going to tell you to go back to square one and go through the order anyway. So it doesn't matter that they've got it. They want you to ask everybody else who doesn't have it in order for you to have all the paperwork that says they don't have it, they don't have it, they don't have it, they don't have it, they don't have it. So you guys got to look for it. Then basically they go, well, okay, I guess we do have to look for it now. So there's that process. But here's the other thing that I started to feel was a problem, was I kept saying, look, come on, I know we got to go through this, but who's next? When do we get to the NSA? And this is, you know, certainly at a period of time a few years ago when I started this, and I think we're still kind of in this period where people are terrified of the NSA. And I don't just mean civilians and citizens. I mean government personnel, you know, elected officials.
Wow.
Because the NSA has such this power to get up your butt with a flashlight. Like, who wants to knock on their door and get their attention? Like, what are you knocking on my door? What's going on with you? You don't want that NSA flashlight up your butt. Because they might find something, and they might go, oh, we found this. Why are you... I mean, it's essentially this very threatening, bullying, you know, well, we know this now, and what about that? And we've got some evidence and pictures of you. And, you know, really just as soon as you start saying, hey, you know, I got a constituent who needs his records, if they don't want to really follow the law, well, they're going to go with a bullying tactic of some kind. So I was really just getting the impression that the main problem was no one wanted to go knock on the NSA's door. So as much as they were like, yeah, let's go through this process, when it came to going to the NSA, it was like, I don't want to go to the... I mean, no one wants to do it. No one wants to go and knock on their door and make them be accountable to
and
the stuff
did
that
you?
They, well, we're still in that process. And essentially, here's where I've been left in that process, is that I'm now at a point where my congressman's office and the aide have kind of made it pretty clear that they said, look, we've kind of at a stuck spot, and again, I won't mention the guy's name because he certainly doesn't want the attention,
yeah, right.
But he was so cool, and he said, look, he said, we're at this place where in order for us to proceed, he said, and again, I want to emphasize this, we are not saying we disbelieve you. We are not saying that we don't think that you are a sincere individual who has every right to file this paperwork and look for this record. I mean, there was a tacit, you know, acceptance mm-hmm. without admitting, you know, we believe you. No one really said, we believe you, but it was like, we don't think you're lying, mm-hmm. we don't think you're deceiving us, we don't think you're doing this to get any kind of weird attention. We believe that you are sincerely trying to get your records, and we would very much like to help you with that, but we are at a point where you're going to have to start submitting legal letters from a lawyer.
God.
In order to push this down the road, in order to kick this can down the road, you're going to need some lawyer power, you know. And I was like, oh, okay. And so part of the problem, and there is a complication of both, you know, attorneys who don't want to touch this, you know, like
right.
they don't want to like get
they don't
up.
Want to rub elbows in this kind
well,
of
well, yeah, they don't want to make the NSA
community.
Mad either. But the other problem is, like, do you have any idea how many qualified attorneys in this area of searching for record keeping that there are? I can tell you without naming their names, there are three. There are three in the entire continental United States who have any serious expertise at filing this paperwork and getting results. Now, I've talked to some other attorneys who have some ideas, you know, a FISA court lawsuit, you know, because there's no way we're going to go through regular court, but basically a FISA, a Federal Intelligence Security court, which is covert, secret. We go in there and it's a secret closed door meeting, and, you know, we basically are saying we need to sue for these records. We need to sue on behalf of our clients now.
Oh my God.
But basically that hasn't been done yet. No one's done that. So the notion of doing that is a good notion, but no one's done it yet. So until we can succeed at that, we don't know how that's going to work. So with the three people, And to be honest, they're getting to be these older lawyers who mm-hmm. are kind of like, can't take new cases. Mm-hmm. To be honest, they're getting tired. I mean, Daniel Sheehan is just getting to this point in his career where he's doing other things. And to be honest, I think he's burnt on, you know, disclosure stuff. And I think he spent the last 20 years working on it. And now it's just like, oh, how can I do that? And I think he's really changed his focus to more like on the ground sort of social justice stuff again, because like this exopolitics stuff is just, you know, it's a lot of brick walls. So with those three people, only those three like qualified, experienced attorneys who have real experience doing this again and again for years, you know, trying to get any one of them to take the case is just not happening. And trying to get some other younger, excited attorney to take the case is, you know, they don't want to touch it. So, you know, I kind of said, well, geez, what am I going to have to do? Go be my own lawyer and go to law school myself? Maybe. So there was a period of time, like about a year and a half ago, I was just so burning. I said, fine, I'm going to go to law school. I'm going to go to law school. I'll be my own lawyer and I'll file my own paperwork. And other stuff has happened that I haven't, like, signed up and
right.
enrolled in law school
right.
to do that. But
too busy.
But clearly, you know, without going to law school, I know it's also possible to go to the law library, start breaking out books, and talk
sure.
to some other advisors to say, here, look at this, look at that. I get that. So, you know, maybe when I've got, you know,
that's insane.
50 hours a week to go to the law library and start digging through legalese, then maybe, you know, I can do that. So basically,
wow. Well,
here's the answer to that question.
Okay.
I don't know when we're going to get there, but I'm
dedicated. I think we all figure that out.
But I'm dedicated to the process. I am in no way like backing off or saying whatever. It's like, if this is slow and steady wins the race, like
yeah,
the tortoise,
just
we're just going to do it. And so I tell you what, when I get records, I will publish stuff on my yeah. site and people will be the first to know, and I'll do interviews about it. And,
okay.
But we're waiting for that. So here's my other answer to that.
Okay.
The simple answer is that what I am doing when I say, and I have said many times, both in writing and verbally, this is my sworn testimony as a United States military officer. Mm-hmm. Now, some people don't understand the legal liability of that. Okay? So let me explain a little thing about legal liability. If you are a doctor or a lawyer or a United States military officer, there are certain freedoms you do not have. If you commit fraud of any kind, you lie publicly in any way, you make gain off of a criminal act or of a fraudulent act in any way. If you are a lawyer, you can be disbarred. If you are a doctor, you can be lose your medical license. And if you are a military officer, that is a felony. That is several felonies. You can be tried and charged under the UCMJ. If you're impersonating an officer, that is a felony. Okay? So if I'm a liar, in any way, shape, or form, if I say this is my sworn testimony and that's a lie, I'm a felon. And the truth is, and I've talked to an attorney about this, if I'm committing those crimes, there's a process for that, and I'm very public. So it would mean that either one or both of the Marine Corps or the FBI would send me a letter and say, you need to show proof or cease and desist. Which, I would love it if they did that. Because basically, then I would have the paper.
I was going to say, you'd get the paperwork,
then,
right?
Well, then I would have that paperwork, and then I could say, great, you guys want to like me to show proof? Then let's have a hearing. Let's set up the hearing. Let me get my JAG representation. Let me get my paperwork to file. Let's go ahead and do it. And then that opens a door that then they have to allow me a JAG representative.
Sure.
They have to let
It'll
me file.
Speed up the process.
Well, and it will essentially allow something to happen that they don't want to happen. Mm-hmm. They don't want to accelerate that process. So if I were truly breaking the law, if I were truly committing a fraudulent, felonious act, I would have received letters by now. I would have received a, hey, you need to... I would have also received, I think, way more negative feedback from real military officers and real Marines. And you know what? I have not had a single military officer, a single Marine, look at me and go, you're full of crap.
And
in fact, it has been the opposite. Every single Marine I have ever met has given me a Semper Fi, slapped me on the back, and said, thank you so much. And I'm telling you, if other Marines can smell Marine on me,
well, trust me, you can smell Marine on me.
Okay, you know, I mean, that should be good enough for... That should be good enough. Thank you.
No, I'm serious.
Yeah, I mean, that should be good enough for people who understand the law and legal liability. I cannot be legally doing this if I'm committing fraud.
Yeah.
So I realize for some people, if they don't understand the legalese, that may not resonate in their brain to understand that. But anyone who understands legal liability understands that I cannot be lying or committing fraud without cuffs being on me and all kinds of crap happening.
Well, and I wanted that out of the way.
No, thank you. I appreciate that.
So
I'd like to clarify that.
That it's important for the entire, spiritual, ufology, conspiracy community to get the legitimacy of what you're doing. So
let me
now
say
that
this.
Just
real quick. If I was making up this story, it would make so much more sense to me to just say, well, I'm a sergeant, because that doesn't carry the same legal liability of saying I'm an officer. Mm-hmm. I would say, oh, I'm a sergeant, because then that could slip under the wire. But the instant that I say, no, I'm standing firm in what my highest rank, what my security clearance, where what I earned, I earned my bars. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't get that given to me in a Cracker Jack box. I earned that. I clawed my way up from the bottom. I am a Mustang officer. I started at the bottom, clawed my way up to sergeant major, and got my promotion, got my officer candidate school, and I earned those bars. So anyone who thinks otherwise, you know, bring it. Okay?
Trust me, he's serious. Okay, well,
yeah,
let's shift gears.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit more about your cruising through the solar system.
Yes.
Because that's what everybody really wants to hear.
Yeah, it's fun.
And you've talked about 17-plus years where you were literally in a war situation on planet Mars.
Right, right. Seventeen years, 3 months, 14 days, 22 hours, who's counting?
Yeah, exactly. It goes into the minute, basically. So, during that very long period of time, are you at liberty to share what was the ultimate agenda and what was the ultimate victory?
I cannot in any way, because I just don't know, what the ultimate goal was.
Okay.
As a soldier on the ground, very rarely are you ever going to have...
So true.
Like, what is the real goal here? I would suspect from everything I've learned since that the goal was... test military technology for an industrial, a military, an advanced cabal, military industrial complex, which is manufacturing all this very, very advanced space age war weaponry to sell to other spacefaring species. Because we, because people may not understand this, we make stuff.
Yes.
As manufacturers, as builders, as assembly liners, we make precision, great equipment that other people just can't make. So we're great replicators and builders and makers of things. Well, but great replicators. I mean, we're good at taking a protocol, making an industry process, making an assembly line, training people for those protocols and making those things, having quality control to make sure that we make good products. We've been doing it for a very long time and we're very good at making good products.
So replicators are completely not out of the question. They're not totally legitimate. They're completely in today's society. They're just not here on the ground floor yet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So I would say the main goal was probably just the continued development of military technology for the sale of that military technology to other folks.
And also the medical advancement, I would imagine.
Yes.
And how they were able to put the bodies back
in. Absolutely. That essentially that medical technology makes every single, say this again, every single aspect of current medical technology we have completely dark ages obsolete.
Wow.
Pharmacology, invasive surgery, x-rays, MRIs, excuse me, all of that is antique dark ages technology compared to these holographic regenerating medical beds.
Which are non-invasive.
No, non-invasive at all.
No pain.
No pain, right? Non-invasive. No drugs, no messing with your body chemistry, just telling your body, oh, keep growing, or, you know, repair this. It just tells your body to fix it using this cellular resolution holographic technology. It's pretty incredible.
How cool
pretty
is
incredible.
That? So you said there were 300 of you.
In the original project that made me, correct, Project Moonshadow, when
and
I was
were,
a child.
Moonshadow, okay. So, and were you a... Were you fully cognizant of what was going on while you're during that training period?
Or was this
when you were kind of traveling in and out of ships and time?
I would say that I was still very cognizantly aware of it. It's just because, again, when you kind of, the next morning, you know, you wake up from this dream state where if they took you away and then brought you back, you know, that gap when you were, I'm asleep, they take me, I go do something, they bring me back, I'm asleep, and I wake up, and, oh, that part of you that's like, you remember it, you feel it, but you're really, your first inclination is to go, I didn't get picked up by your spaceship, I just had a weird dream, oh, that was a vivid dream, wow, I woke up, and I really felt like this bullet, man, I was just...
And I had a bruise on me?
I mean, I woke up really feeling it, you know? And so you just really, rather than accept this more difficult, traumatic kind of explanation, you'd rather just go, oh, that was a weird dream. So while I knew what was happening, I could remember what was happening. I remembered the training, which was weird, because let me tell you, it's weird at like 11, 12, 13 to have all this really advanced military and survival training and just not understanding that for some reason, you are not like your friends at school. Like, you are not doing things that they do. You are not interacting with them the same way.
13.
You know, okay, and this very funny thing happened, and it's not like, I'm not trying to brag when I say this. This is what happened. I'm in the seventh grade, and I you know, got in a little a conflict with a fellow schoolmate over, you know, his girlfriend, and, you know, basically, he was standing there kind of, you know, having this verbal confrontation. So it's like, and I basically, dude, I'm not going to fight you. This is, you know, I'm not, you know, whatever. Like, sorry that you're offended or whatever, that I like your girlfriend or whatever, but just whatever. And he basically just took a swing, just straight at me, just took a swing. And I was like, I'm not going to fight you. But what happened without me thinking about it, this autonomic, my hand just went up, bam, and I just grabbed his fist right out of the air.
You were how old?
11.
Oh,
I was 11. I just went, boom, grabbed his hand out of there, and I basically just went like that, which twisted his arm around. He had to come to school next day with a sprained brace, or totally sprained his wrist.
Were you blown away by yourself?
Yeah, I grabbed, twist, And then he goes, ah, and starts crying. I mean, we're 11. Yeah. You know, it's not like we're big, tough really men young. At this point. We're boys fighting. So, and I was just as surprised as anything. And of course, as soon as he starts crying and go, ah, I mean, we're done. I let go, you know, and I'm like, okay, fight's over.
Oh my God.
But
such a trip.
I just was like, wow, did I just grab his fist out of the air? I was like, yeah, I did. That's weird. So I didn't know what to say about that other than I'd never seen any of my other friends grab somebody's fist out of the air in a fight.
Awesome. One of my burning questions when I've been hanging out.
I mean, and I met his fist. I mean, as his fist was coming, I just met it right there. I mean,
without thinking, just
like that. I no think. I was like, I'm not going to fight you, dude. Oh.
I have been wanting to ask you this, and I kept forgetting. Can you give me the comparison between the off-planet special ops that you're involved in versus, say, the SEALs? Or the Green Berets, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, you're first off, you're talking about the separation between
terrestrial,
really well-trained soldiers and genetically augmented soldiers.
Got it. Right.
So first of all, again, you're starting with a much...
Really finely tuned
okay. Raw material.
Okay, got it.
And really well-trained raw material. And essentially then the equipment. I mean, on Mars we had it was the Archer series... full body power assisted armor and environment suit.
Whoa.
Yeah, so this is like an exosuit when you
like
know
the Transformer?
Well, not exactly. Okay, so basically some people have seen these videos, Raytheon and these companies, they're like, we're just experimenting with this new exosuit technology, which is like these, you know, an exosuit has got these bars, it's a hydraulic suit
yes.
that you can soldiers can walk longer, lift heavier objects because it's a power-assisted suit. So you're not using your muscles, you're using the hydraulic muscles of a powered suit. Now, the ones that you'll see on, like, video, it's like they don't have a power source right on it as a cable hooked up to a big generator.
Right.
You know, and they're like, we're just now developing this technology, and maybe in a few years we'll be able to implement poppycock, right?
Oh,
so basically, you know, we have these very, very advanced, it's an exosuit, it's full body armor, it's an environment suit, the helmet has a HUD display, you know, so that basically
wow.
you're looking at
it's
all
like
these,
a computer readout?
Well, no, it's an overlay of, okay, you're looking out here and it's an overlaid across that is an infrared, a UV,
right
a sonogram. There's all these different optics that are being overlaid in this HUD, as well as a targeting system. So basically, if I hold up my rifle, the targeter on the rifle is actually going to show a reticle upon, like a video game, on the inside of my helmet.
God.
So I can hip shoot like this, because as I point, the reticle in my eye is actually pointing at the target, so I don't actually have to get the sight up here. Now, we had good optical sights if you want to take a nice, accurate shot, but essentially, with that reticle right here, it's video game shooting. You know,
incredible.
I can just, you know, by looking at that reticle, it also identifies incoming targets. It has the ability to identify incoming projectiles, like it highlights them and lights them up and shows them coming in like a long ways off. So you see, so you can see a bullet. You can actually see a bullet coming for you 1,000 yards away. Now, to be honest, because it's lit up in the HUD. Like, when you see that coming, you can move.
Uh-huh.
Because you see it way out
right.
there. Even though it's flying towards you, you have a second to dodge a freaking bullet, because the
heads-up
display is actually showing you where it's coming from.
Awesome.
So it's incredible. And
so do you have less propensity for fatalities because of all of this advanced equipment versus the SEALs, et cetera, that are on ground here?
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, we had a... I mean, basically, there's no amount of physical damage that they can't repair unless you're, like, unretrievable, you know, which is, like, fully dead.
Okay.
And essentially, though, we had a what I would say is, like, a less than 5% annual fatality
amazing.
Rate. I mean, so, like, of our entire division, less than 5% of the personnel would perish, would actually die in a year.
What would you... consider fully dead, because you were talking the other day about they're doing head transplants.
Right, okay, so essentially it's about electrical activity in the brain and your silver cord that
silver
connects,
cord.
Yeah,
okay.
that connects to the whatever other dimensions.
So it's their time. Basically.
Well, basically, it's kind of even cheating that. You know, they can even really do these things that cheat, is it your time? It's basically, do they lose enough head, you know, skull piece, brain piece, is does the damage to the body cause a drop in electrical activity that's so fast that they can't stabilize you and, you know, get you back? And essentially, once you reach that dead electrical activity in the brain, the cord disconnects and there's no getting you back. Because basically, all they're able to do is by fixing your body, as long as that cord is connected, by repairing the body, it's going to pull that back in when the body's ready, because that's a natural process. But if the body's too damaged to repair, it wants to go. Yeah. So there's this fine line between that electrical activity being maintained or not. So, yeah, they basically can cheat death in so many different ways.
That's crazy. And I would imagine, Randy, that the medics, there's got to be a standby crew of very advanced, equipment, but medics that are highly trained for this type of operation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So they're probably readily available. Yes. Now, when you were on Mars, you said, you know, 17 and a half years, and we were talking the other day about how you do agree that the solar system is basically clear, right?
Our intelligence sources would indicate that is very true,
so,
yes.
You guys hearing that?
We've essentially, the Solar Warden Radiant Guardian fleets, which I know there's some confusion about this, so I think, let me explain this. Some people say Solar Warden, Radiant Guardian, like, is it the same thing? Is it the different thing? So in the same way that our naval fleets here on the ground in the ocean, we have a Atlantic fleet, a Pacific fleet, a North Atlantic fleet. I mean, they're divided into fleets so that one admiral isn't responsible for too many ships that are too far away.
Sure.
You don't want the
totally
Atlantic. Yeah, you don't want the Atlantic, you know, admiral trying to decide what's happening over here in the Pacific because it's just too far away. So my understanding is there's some arbitrary dividing line that splits the solar system in half, and half the one fleet on one side is the Solar Warden fleet, and the fleet on the other side is the Radiant Guardian fleet. So the Radiant Guardian Solar Warden fleets are essentially the equivalent of a Atlantic fleet, Pacific fleet.
Makes so much sense.
Yeah. You don't want one admiral in charge of too many ships too far away. And the galaxy, the solar system's big. So, you know, you're way over here, and something's happened over here, you want more localized control and authority.
So now, the other thing that I thought was interesting, you and I were talking about who were kind of the badasses of the solar system. So, we talked about the Procyon.
Mm-hmm.
Procyonians?
Procyonians?
Procyonians.
I think how you say that.
We talked about the Lyrans.
Yep.
And who was the third one that you were really...
The Tausiteans.
Tausiteans. And how far out are they within the solar system?
You mean their forward operating bases and stuff? They're, I think, mostly on moons of Jupiter and Saturn at this time.
Okay, that makes sense.
Though the moons of Jupiter and Saturn are considered, like, less desirable locations because no one wants to live on Jupiter or Saturn.
Why?
They're not habitable by our standards. That doesn't mean there is not any kind of organic life on those worlds. It just
outside
means,
or internally?
Inside, internally. Okay. It just means that it is such a type of environment or such a type of life that there's no way we're going to build a base on Saturn that's not going to get destroyed by the weather. Well, first of all, how are you going to build it in that weather?
Yeah, exactly.
How are you going to get down there in that weather? How are you going to land in that weather? And Jupiter's the same way. Like as a gas giant, there is this interesting theory, you know, that there's a nickel core or there is some sort of solid core, you know, in the middle that's way down beneath all these gases where the pressure is really, really built and heavy. Is it? I don't know. Well, that Jupiter is definitely so big that the gravity and the pressure would kill us. I mean, there's just no way any human being could ever survive on Jupiter. Even if you had some kind of bubble encapsulated city, like you'd get into that pressure and get into that gravity and you're just dead. There's just that. That is a greater force in the laws of physics than we could ever be sustained by. So these moons, which have some, you know, like, what I would say is more like small life, not like a sentient form, microbial mats, microorganisms. Let's see which one is the ocean one. I always forget whether it's Io or Europa, which has the ice all over it and has the ocean underneath. Okay, so they got fish and different kind of aquatic life. But what else do they have? I don't think that they have an advanced civilization down there. And the other one, which doesn't have the ice, which has an atmosphere, but it's not conducive to you and I walking and breathing. It's just so different that if you had the time or resources to build a base there, it'd be very safe because no one really is going to want to come visit because there's really the environment is too otherwise difficult to mine or explore. So you're kind of safe there from anybody.
So you're basically the furthest out that the military has gotten is Saturn.
No. No, 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 no. We've gotten all the